And we're holding on Kuf Chaf Vav Amud Aleph, the first line. We've been learning the last couple of blats about the dinim of the Bechor, getting the double portion and the details in that. So the Gemara says, Amud of Huna, Amud of Asi, Bechor Shem Micha, Micha. If a Bechor protests, then his protest is valid. So what does that mean? So the Rashbam's first explanation is that it means that you have the brothers are going to be dividing up the property and the Bechor is going to be getting his double portion. Now we've been talking about that the Bechor doesn't get a double portion of the Shvach that happens after his father passed away. We said there's a Machlokas if the Shvach happens on its own. There's Machlokas Rebbe and the Chachamim. The Halacha is like the Chachamim. So there's only, for example, if the Shvach came by itself and the thing still has its original name, for example, a tree whose trunk got fatter, then he gets a double portion in that improvement as well, but not if it's something where the name changed, for example, grain that became ripe, and certainly not, then the Chachamim hold he doesn't get a double portion of that improvement, and certainly not if the Yisroelim themselves put in money and effort into that improvement, then he doesn't get a double portion. So now, if the Bechor protests and says, you know what, instead of you going and improving the property, and then later on, when it comes to dividing it up among ourselves, then we're going to have to figure out what I get a double portion of and whatnot. So he protests them and tells them, let's just divide it up now. I'll make whatever improvements I want to my part of the property. And that way I can have all the shvach. So it's a valid machah. And now, if they don't pay attention and they go and do and make shvach in the property and make improvements in the property before they divide it, then he still would get a double portion of, that shvach. Because in other words, basically the idea would be as soon as he says I want to be zoicha in it, then already he is zoicha in it wherever it is, and therefore we can say at that point the shvach was already done to his nechassim. So that's the Rashbam's first explanation. After we go through the piece of Gemara, then we'll talk about the Rashbam brings a whole different explanation of the situation from Rabbeinu Chanan. Omer Rabba Mistaber Taima Dirabasi Ba'anovim Ubotsrum. It's logical to accept that Rab Asi's din would apply about this macha, would apply, for example, if we're talking about the improvement in grapes that were harvested. So for example, it was time to harvest the grapes and they harvested it without checking with the Bechor. And now we're saying that he would be entitled to the improvement in value. Zeisim or muskum, or for example, if it was olives and they had harvested them as well. And in English, you just have the word harvest for all the different kinds of crops. In Lashon Kodesh, you have different words for the harvesting of different kinds of crops. The one for grapes is botsar, the one for olives is mosak, and so forth. Anyway, I will dochum loy, but says Rabba, but if they went so far, even as pressing them into wine or oil, and the idea was they're saying that now we're still having this all as property in common, and when we're going to split up in it, then the Bechor still wouldn't get a double portion of that, because in that case, then they were koine it with shinui. We learned back in Bava Kama that, for example, a person steals something and makes it into something else. So we said then that he's koine, for example, there was an example over there where he stole wood and made it into kalim, where then he doesn't return the original wood. He was koine it with shinui. And all he has to pay back is the value of it. So the same way over here then. You can't say that the original grapes or that the wine that was produced from them are in the Bechor's Rishus anymore, because in effect it was stolen from him, and therefore they just owe him the value of it. And since they were coining it, then you can't say that he would get a double portion of that improved value. That's how the Rashbam learns. Tosfos wonders about that. Tosfos wonders about that because that opinion is not universally agreed to. That he's kohen just with a shinui like that. So how can we say as a blanket statement that once they press them then they're kohen with shinui. So in fact, Achronim discuss further what Tosfos's question is that the halacha is in fact the halacha is in fact that way that shinui is in fact kohen. So now the Gemara can well ask here we have over here in particular anyway here we're going to have Rabbi Yosef and Shmuel are going to be involved in the sugya over here and they're the ones who hold in that sugya in Bava Kamma that shinui is koine. So that's the Rashbam versus Tosfos respectively as far as that din. On the other hand, Rabbi Yosef Amar Afilu Dorchum. Rabbi Yosef says even if they press them, then still if he was Moshe before that, then he would still get a double portion of that improvement to them, or at least that's how it sounds like. It sounds like Rabbi Yosef is saying. So the Gemara asks Dorchum, what do you mean if they press them? Meikr Invi v'hashta chamra. The fact is that well, there's a major shinui over here. Before it was grapes, now it's wine. How could Rabbi Yosef be saying that? How could Rabbi Yosef be saying that he still gets a double portion? And again, that fits well with that point that the Achronim make that the Nesivos and the Ketzos and so forth. What's Tosfos wondering about? That according to the opinions that Shinui is not Kohen, Rabbi Yosef is one of the Amoraim who hold that Shinui is Kohen. So now the Gemara's question that is very understandable. Well, if Shinui is Kohen, why would the Bechor get a double portion of it? And the answer is kidomer of ukva bachoma. The answer is we don't mean that he would get a double portion. What we mean is like Rav Ukva bachoma says later in the next piece of the sugya, litin lo dmei hezek anova. It means that they have to pay him if there was damage as far as the grapes. So in other words, we're talking about, let's say, so they made the grapes into wine, and then something happened that caused the wine to lose value, whether it's that it went sour, whether it's that it spilled or whatever. So now, the wine is not worth even as much as the grapes from which it was produced. So Rabbi Yosef is saying that. So first we said Rabbah had said that if they press them, then that's it. He no longer can get a double portion of anything involving that. Rabbi Yosef is saying that no. The fact is that even if they press them, but then some of it spilled or whatever. Nevertheless, the Bechor is entitled to a double portion as much as the grapes would have been worth when they were first harvested. Because again, he was Moshe to begin with. They weren't supposed to press those grapes. So therefore it would be, again, kolagazlanim, mishaman, kishasagzela. So therefore they would have to pay according to the value of how much it was worth when they in effect stole them from him by pressing them. And therefore, so we would say, that they have to pay him according to the value of the grapes at the time. So in other words, it comes out, says the Rashbam, according to that way of looking at it, Rabba and Rabbi Yosef are not actually arguing, they're talking about different scenarios. Rabba's talking about where the wine is in fact worth more than the grapes that it came from, and therefore Rabba is saying that because they were koneh with shinui, therefore with an irreversible shinui like that, then therefore they don't give him a double portion of that. And Rabbi Yosef saying that's fine, but if it went down in value because of spoilage or spilling or whatever, then in fact they are going to have to give him the double portion as much as the grapes were worth at the time. Now that way of understanding this beginning of the sugya, Rav Asi's statement and the understandings of the Amoraim on it, that is Rashbam's own explanation. Then he brings from Rabbeinu Hanano that this Bechor Shemicha is a whole different thing. What we're going to talk about later on in the sugya, we're going to start talking about now, right after this, you can have a case where the Bechor is Mevater, foregoes and says, I don't want my chelik b'chura. So then Rabbi Hanan explains, if he said, so now we're going to have cases, on the other hand, we're going to have cases as we go through the sugya, where the Bechor is saying, when it comes to a particular part of the Yerusha, I don't need a double portion of it, and the Gemara is going to establish as we go through the sugya, that by default, that means that he's foregoing his chelik b'chora in everything. The Gemara is going to give examples of that soon. So now, if he's Moicha and says, I understand that in this particular thing, I took only a single chelik, but that doesn't mean that I'm foregoing my rights to the double portion and everything else, then Rav Asi is telling us that that is a valid macha. He doesn't need to make a macha again. So now, Rabba would say, so fine, when you have, for example, it was grapes, which then they harvested, grapes or olives, which they harvested, then he doesn't need to make another macha. But if let's say they had pressed them into wine or oil, and he wasn't moicha again at that time, and just took a single portion of that, then we would say that he is mevato. Then we'd say that he is foregoing his rights to the chelik b'chora in everything else. In other words, the idea being because. The wine and the oil are much different than the wine and the oil are much different than the grapes that they came from. So that would be like a whole different kind of of property, a whole different part of the Yerusha, where therefore you would have to be moicha individually on that. So the Rashbam doesn't like that explanation for one thing, because this whole part about vitur, this whole part about the Bechor foregoing or not foregoing his Yerusha is not the subject under discussion yet. That's going to come up later. That's going to come up later on. So why is the, where is Rav Asi coming from even to start this concept of Micha and Loi Micha? And also the Rashbam says, we only have you would first have to have that first he took a single portion of one of the other parts of the property, and then we can talk about, Vitur or not, as the Gemara is going to go on to say over here. So this would be kind of like out of the blue. Nonetheless, the Rambam, for example, learns the way that Rabbeinu Hanano does. He learns the din like that. So that's what it means exactly. He took some of the estate. He took a single portion of some part of the estate, whether we're talking Karka or Metalflin or whatever, and he took a single portion. So then, by default, he's Mevater and anything else, unless he was Moicha, unless, as Rav Asi says over here, he's Moicha. And it says, I don't mean to do that throughout the Nechosim, I just did this in this particular thing. And then again, Rabba is saying, so then there would be a difference once the grapes were pressed into wine, he would have to be Moicha again, because if he takes only a single portion of the wine, then he is Mevata and all the rest of the Nechosim, because again, then these are different kinds of things. Rabbi Yosef then would be adding the point, that after it was pressed into wine, then they would have to give him, if there was damage over there, they would have to give him the money to make up for it, because then it would be a matter of gzela. So the one that Rambam brings us halacha, in fact, the Raivad argues on it. He says, Yeshlon of Derech Acheres B'chozer, we have a different way in all of this. Meaning, in other words, basically, that the Rambam is learning like Rabbeinu Hanano, and the Raivad prefers to understand Nor Gemara the way that Rashbam did, that we're not talking about Vitur, that we're talking about simply where he says, I don't want you to divide it up yet, because I want to be able to get all the Shvach of my portion for myself. So the Gemara goes on. What was the case where Rav Ukva bar Choma originally said his din, where he said litin lo dmei hezek anovav, that they have to pay him for the hezek to his grapes? What was the case that Rav Ukva bar Choma was talking about? So aha, he was referring the original reference of his statement was as follows. Da'amara of Yehuda Amashmo, Bechor Poshet Shiniach Lahem Aviyam Anovim U'Botzrum, Now, if the father had left to a bechur and a poshut, there were two sons, let's say, a bechur and a non-bechur, and their father had left them grapes or botsrum, and they harvested them, zesum or muskum, or he left them olives, and they harvested them, b'chor notal pishnayim, then the b'chor gets a double portion, afilu dorchum, and that would be the case even if they pressed them. And again, the Gemara has the same question as before, dorchum, what do you mean if they pressed them? Why should he get a double portion of the wine? Mi'ikra invi hashta chamra. After all, there's a big shinui, because before there were grapes, and now there's wine, oma ma'okva b'chor, and Rav Okra Bar Chama says, what we mean is that if there was a hezek, if the wine spilled or went sour or whatever, that they would have to compensate him for that. So the same way the Gemara has taken that statement of Rav Okra Bar Chama and applied it again to the din of Bechor Shemicha, where according to the Rashbam's and the Ravid's explanation, it would mean where the Bechor is saying, don't harvest the grapes and don't press the wine yet. I want to be able to get the shvach from it. And according to the Ben Chananel, and according to the Rambam, what we mean is the Bechor said, I understand I only took a single portion of something else, but I don't mean to forego my double portion when it comes to these grapes or it comes to these olives. And Rav Ukrava, and so Rabba had said, and then Shmuel are saying that if he doesn't make that same protest again once the olives are pressed, then he's going to into wine. If once the grapes or the olives are pressed, then he's going to by default forego the rest of the chelik b'chora in the rest of the nechassim, unless he specifically says otherwise. And the point is that once they're pressed, he would have to indeed make that machal again. And if he doesn't, then the most that he can get is the hezek, of it. Okay. So let's talk now about this matter of vitur, this matter that a bechor can forego the double portion. If the bechor takes a portion equivalent to that of a regular son, not a bechor, a single portion, viter, then it means that he's foregone the chelek bechora in the rest of the nechassim. And the idea behind that being the Torah calls the portion of the bechora it calls it a matana. So we said, for example, we had previously where, for example, if there was a debt outstanding against the estate, and the bechor says, I don't want to receive my double portion, and I don't want to have to pay a double portion of the debt, rashoi, then we said he can do that because it's a matana, and a person can forego a matana that should be coming to him. So the same way, in other words, he can forego a matana over here, and he can say that I don't want the double portion. So, my vitter, so to what extent has he been mevater, if we're saying that he's mevater, to what extent is that effective? In other words, do we say that it applies only to that one thing or to everything? So, Rav Papa, Mishmei D'Rava, I'm a vitter ba'ois ha'sada. So Rav Papa says that it means, Rav Papa, in the name of Rava, says that it means that he's only foregone his chelek b'chora within that one field. So they started dividing up the fields, for example. He chose to take only one field instead of the two that he would have been entitled to. Then it means that he's mevater and he can't change his mind afterwards and say, you know what, actually I do want the second field as well. But it wouldn't affect, according to the Papa, it wouldn't affect the rest of the Nechassim. He'd still be entitled to a double portion of those. Rapapi mishmei derava ama viter b'chol anachosim kolam. On the other hand, Rapapi in the name of Rav, you have Rapapa and you have Rapapi. He says in the name of Rava, viter b'chol anachosim kolam. It means that he's mevater on all the nachosim. So the piece of Gemara that we said before, according to Rabbi Chananel and according to the Rambam, would fit with this understanding that once he's mevater in one, automatically he's mevater in the other. So Rav Asi would have been making the point before that if he protests and if he specifically says, no, I'm only being mevater on this one, then it doesn't affect the rest of them. But otherwise, by default, Rav Papi is saying that once he's mevater in one, he would mevater in all of it. So let's analyze their respective opinions. Rapapa Mishmei Durava Amavitya Ba'osa Sada. Why does Rapapa say that, why does Rapapa say that he's Mavata only in that one thing? Kasavar, because Rapapa holds Eimler the Bechor Kodim Chaluka, that the Bechor does not actually own a particular part of the Yerusha before they divide it. So the Rashbam points out, now when it comes to the Yerusha in general, for sure we don't say that each one has their portion before it's divided up. In fact, the Gemara discusses in several places that point about it would be a matter of brera, basically, whether we can say retroactively that whatever they got is what they would have gotten in the first place. So when it comes to the Nachla in general, for sure we don't say that it's considered before they divide it up as if they divided it up already. Up until they actually divide it, it's called Tfusas Abayis. It's just called the general undivided estate, and they all have equal rights to it. So the question would be, says the Rashbam specifically about the Chelek Bechor over here, whether he actually owns it in any, whether we can say that he owns it in any way before he's actually received it. That's a point of the Rashbam. Tosfos actually on Omid Beis in a later context of the sugya says that actually the other way around. The Chelek Bechor, there's no question he doesn't have yet. The Chelek Poshut, yes, definitely they do have a certain ownership of it even before they divided it up. Anyway, so the Papa is saying that the Bechor doesn't have anything before Chalukah. According to the Rashbam, what we mean is that he doesn't even have a Chelek Poshut. He certainly doesn't have the Chelek Bechor. Or rather, to be exact, actually, Rashbam is saying that when it comes to the coins, the Chelek Poshut, definitely none of them have until the Yerusha is actually divided, and the question would be as far as the Chelek Bechora. And again, according to Tosfos, it's the other way around, the Chelek Bechora, for sure he doesn't have, the question is the Chelek Poshut. Anyway, so he holds, so Rapapa holds that none of that happens before the property is actually divided up. So whatever actually came into his possession, then he's able to be moichel. But he's not able to be moichel on the portion that he hasn't actually received yet. It would be almost like a davar shaloi bala olam, and therefore, Papa would say just because he was moichel on one part that they're dividing now doesn't mean that he was moichel on the rest, because how could he? It would basically be a davar shaloi bala olam. It's not in his possession yet to be moichel on. Whereas Rapapi, in the name of Rava, takes the view that the Vita Bechor and Achosim Kulon, he says that the Bechor, by foregoing this Chelek Bechorah in one part, in one division of fields, for example, would be Mavatu on all the rest, because he holds Vita Bechor and Achosim Kulon, because Rapapi holds Yeshle the Bechor, Kodim Chaluka, that the Bechor is still considered to own something, the Chelek Bechorah, even before it's been divided up, he still has, there's like a partnership in all the nechassim, and his portion of the partnership, his percentage of it is twice any of theirs. So therefore you can already say that it's considered a matana to him, and as a matana, he's able to forego it. Once he was moichel on one part, then he's moichel on all of it. So again, according to the Rashbam, they're specifically arguing about the extra portion of the Bechor, but not the Chelek Poshut. The Chelek Poshut says the Rashbam, there's no way that you can say that any of them owns it yet individually to the extent that he could be Moichel. Whereas Tosfos and a number of other Rishonim learn the other way around. The Machlokas is only about the portion of the Bechor, but as the portion of the Poshut, the portion that he would be entitled to as a regular son, that he would be able to be moichel at any time.
So, in fact, a number of the Rishonim point out that, especially, I mean, there's more of a logic to say that a person should be moichel something that didn't yet come to him, rather than something that already did. So how can the Rashbam be saying that he can't be moichel, that he can't be moichel on the grounds that it's davar shalai bal olam? That would be a reason for them to support Tosfos' understanding of it. There was an explanation, actually, from the Chidushi HaGranat, of Naftali Trup, a famous pre-war Rosh Hashiva, who explained that basically the question is, what is the status of this Tfusas HaBayis, of this undivided estate? Is it considered like a partnership? So we just don't know. Each one owns a share of the partnership. It just hasn't been decided yet who owns what part. So therefore, he's able to be moichel on his partnership, on his portion of the partnership. Whereas the Rashbam would say that it's more like a collective ownership. It's not really like a partnership. It's a collective ownership, and therefore he doesn't have the ability to be moichel yet on his chelik pashut. Only we can talk about his chelik b'chora. Okay, so the Gemara points out, now both the Papi and the Papa are quoting their opinions in the name of Rava. So what does Rava actually hold? So the Papi and the Papa lab befedush itmar elam iklole itmar. This machlokas of the Papi and the Papa is not actually something that was said explicitly. It's not that Rava had said explicitly one way or the other. Each one is deducing differently from a story, from a case that was brought to Rava. Namely, Darhu Bechor de Ozel Zaben Nichsi Dideu de Pashut. There was a case where Bechor went and before the estate was divided up, he went and sold his portion, his entire portion, his chelik Pashut, and his chelik Bechorda to somebody else without checking with his brothers. Where the idea was going to be that later on they would go and split up the money of it. In other words, so he's saying, so right now I don't need these fields and whatnot, but I do need the money. So before we've even split it up, I'll go and sell my portion, and then we'll figure it out when we come to the actual division. So Ozel Yasmi Bnei Pashut. Now then afterwards, so he did that. So he sold his portion. He went and sold the entire Yerusha without checking with his brothers. And the idea was, he was figuring, what we'll do is, I'll go and sell the entire estate. Me as a Bechor, I'm entitled to a double portion. My brother only to a single one. So very well, afterwards I'll take the money and I'll keep 2/3 of it for myself and I'll give him the 1/3. Later on, not knowing that, also Yasmi bnei Pashut lamechol Tamri. So later on, the sons of the Pashut, not knowing that their uncle had gone and sold the entire property, went lamechol Tamri. They went to eat dates mehanu lekuchos from those buyers. So in other words, they didn't know that the property had been sold, and they figured that their father owns 1/3 of those dates. So they went to eat some of them. Mechunhu, but the buyer, whoever had bought the property, hit them and then forcibly prevented them from taking anything, because he said, "What are you talking about? I already bought the property." Amrilahu Kroivim. So the relatives of these Yisroimim say to the buyer, Loimistaya Dizavantinu Lenachsayu. Is it not bad enough that you went and bought this property without permission? Elam Mimchanami Machisulahu. But you're actually going and hitting them. How could you do that? The fact is that the Bechor, before he sold this property, didn't check with his brother. And certainly he could, can he sell his chelik b'chorda? Fine, it's going to eventually be his, but can he sell also the chelik pasha, the part that's supposed to go to his brother? He had no right to unilaterally sell that. So how can you be, so these Yisraelim have every right to those dates. Also Lakamedi Rava, so the case came to Rava, Omalahu, and he said to them, Loy also Vloy Klum, what the Bechor did with this sale does not count. The sale is not valid. So now that we have that statement, that psak din of Rava, so now Rav Papa and Rav Papi argued, what did Rava mean by that? Marasovalai also klumba palga. Rav Papi took the view that it meant that it means that the bechur did not do anything, that his sale was invalid only as far as the half of his portion, namely the chelik poshert. So therefore, in other words, so 2/3 of the sale would be invalid. So the part that would have gone to his brother, he had no right to sell unilaterally. Even the part of Poshut of his own, he wouldn't have had the ability to sell, because again, according to the Papi, we're saying that it's not considered his yet, it would be like a davar shelo b'olam. But the chelek b'chora, he would have had the ability to sell, and therefore to that extent the sale is valid. Or marasava b'kulu, whereas Rav Papa holds it means as far as everything, there's no part of the sale that's valid at all, neither the chelek b'chora nor the chelek pashut, because even that he doesn't own any part of it before the chalukah. So now, based on that, we can deduce from that what they would hold. And what they each think that Rava would hold as far as the Bechor being Moichel. Where again, if we say that the Bechor, even before the division, does own a certain part of it, namely the Chelek Bechorah, then he has the right to forego that. And therefore, that if he does, then we could say that he foregoes only that, but not the whole thing. Whereas if he says that he doesn't have the right to sell anything at all, then it means that also so now he can't be mevater on the whole thing either. The most he can do is be mevater in the actual part that they're dividing up right now, but he doesn't have the ability to be mevater on the rest of it because it doesn't belong to him in the same way as we're saying that he can't sell any part of it. So again, that's according to the Rashbam, and according to Tosfos, it would be the other way around. Rav Papi's loy also klum de palga means as far as the half, meaning the portion that would have gone to his brother, he had no right to sell it, but therefore that part of the sale would be invalid, and the buyers are wrong for preventing the yisoymim from taking from that part. But as far as his own portion, then he for sure would be able to sell that. Although Tosfos does wonder then in that case, then really what's the chiddush then? If you say loy also like klum as far as his brother's portion, of course not. He, of course not. It's pretty obvious he would have had to check with his brother before he sold. In any case, the point is the Gemara is saying that what Rav Papi and Rav Papa are saying is not something explicit, because you'd have to ask, so what did Rava say? So the answer is Rava didn't say anything at all about the case of Vitur. He said something about the case where the Bechur had sold the entire estate, and the question is to what extent that sale is valid. So Rav Papi and Rav Papa are arguing about the understanding of how we understand what Rava said. The Gemara often does that kind of thing. The Gemara often points out that a machloikas is not something that was said explicitly. We just learn it miklala. We learn it by generalizing from something else. Sometimes the Gemara will point out, so what? The imiklala mai. So what if you're learning it from a generalization? It's a good derivation. It's a good way of finding out the implication of it. Sometimes the Gemara will point out that no, it's not really so valid because you can draw a distinction between one case and another. Here the Gemara doesn't do either of those things. So the Gemara continues, Sholcho mitam, they sent from there, meaning from Eretz Yisrael, in this connection, Bechor shemocha kardim chalukah, that if the Bechor sells any part of the estate before they divided it up, loy also klum, then what he did doesn't count for anything. Alma, which means that shows, according to the Sholcho mitam, according to the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael, they agree with Rav Papa, that the Bechor does not, in fact, own anything before the Chalukah, and therefore that would mean that if he was Mevatar on one part, then he was only Mevatar on that one part, he wouldn't have the ability to be Mevatar on the rest because it doesn't belong to him. However, the Gemara says, "V'hiruchsa," but the halacha is yesh the b'chor kodim chaluka. The b'chor does have his portion in effect even before they divide it, and therefore he's able to be moichel, and the result would be that the result would be more like a papi that once he's mevater on one part, then he's mevater on all of it because he owns all of it to the extent that he would be able to be mevater on it. And again, according to Rabbeinu Chananel and the Rambam on Amud Aleph, if he specifically said beforehand, I don't want to be mevater on the rest of it. I know I'm taking a chelik parshut only in this part, but I don't intend for that to extend to the rest of the Yerusha, then that would be a valid maha, and he wouldn't afford gone with the rest. So Tosfos compares and contrasts this with other things that we've learned before, as far as that the Bechorah is considered a matana, and therefore that you have the dinim of him being able to forego it. And we said that according to the Chachamim, he doesn't get a double portion of shvach the memela, so they wouldn't that imply that it doesn't actually belong to him yet, to the extent of being able to be mevater. So Tosfos explains that. Tosfos explains that based on the pasuk that we learn, based on the pasuk from which we learn the concept of the bechor getting a double portion, and the concept that we learn about the bechor not getting shvach, we can draw a distinction. In other words, the Chachamim are saying he doesn't get a portion of shvach because it's not yimotzeloi, it doesn't exist at the time, it's not motzli, but not because of the point of view, because it's not a matana, because the fact is we're saying over here that it is with a The fact of is we're saying over here that it is a matana. So Tosfos makes that point. And the Rosh says that there's also, you have to consider, says the Rosh, if it didn't say losis loy, if it didn't say that it's matana, then we would have said that yimotze only means that when you say yimotze, that it has to be something present. When the father passes away, we would say only that excludes shvach that the yisomim themselves put in. But once it says losis loy, clarifying that it is a matana, then we're saying that we're saying, so, and on the other hand, losses loy by itself wouldn't exclude shvach at all. In other words, in effect, the Rosh says that following on of what Tosfos says, we actually need both psukim, we actually need both phrases in the pasuk, losses loy and yimotze, in order to make the din clear that on the one hand, it is considered like matana to the extent that he can forego all of it, and on the other hand, that's not fully considered like a matana, in the sense that if there was shvach before the division was done, that he doesn't get a double portion of that. Unless, again, as we said before, it was a shvach to memela, it was something that happened on its own, and that it doesn't change the name of it. So the Gemara tells in this connection a case, Mavzutra midirishva polig b'tsana de pilpuli bahadi achen b'shove. Mavzutra midirishva, Rishva is the name of a place where that he was from. He was a Bechor. He divided up a basket of peppers equally with his brothers without, from the Yerusha, without taking a double portion. Also, a kamei de Ravashi, later on, he came to Ravashi to ask, what about the rest of the estate? Omalei, so Ravashi tells him, Hoyol vitauta b'miktas, vitauta b'chol nechosim, once you mevater on some of it, and in this basket of peppers, you were mevater, you forewent, you chelik b'chora of that, then automatically you were mevater in all the nechosim, because again, we follow a papi in that and say that once he's mevatu in one, he's automatically mevatu in all the other ones, unless he was moicha and specifically said, I don't mean to be mevatu on the rest of them. So therefore, Ravashi is telling this mazutra, midirishva, the result is you've foregone your entire chelik b'chorda in the entire estate. Okay. Mishnah says, if a person, before he passes away, says that Ploini, who is my Bechor, should not get a double portion of my Nechassim, or he says, Ish Ploini, Bni, Lo Yirashim Echav, or he says, Ploini, he wants to disinherit one of his sons, and says that this man who is my son should not inherit together with his other brothers. Loya maklum, what he said doesn't count for anything. Shehisna mashakasa b'Torah, because he's trying to make a tnai against something that it says in the Torah. Mind you, he's not actually making a t'nai per se, he's just making a statement, but nevertheless, that's still considered masna, masha kosev haTorah, and therefore it wouldn't work. He's trying to override something that the Torah says. The Torah says that the Bechor gets a double portion. The Torah says that every son inherits. He's not able to do that, and therefore the regular son still gets his portion, and the Bechor gets a double portion. Continues the Mishnah. Hamachalik nechosav al piv. Now, on the other hand, a shrivmer is dividing up his nechosim, verbally. He's giving matonis. So here we're talking about the first case that the Mishnah was talking about. He's not specifically, he's just saying, I want to disinherit the son, or I want to take away from the chor's double portion. But now we're talking about, now you have the whole concept of matnas shrivmer, where shrivmer can give gifts before he passes away, and those gifts are valid, and we're going to talk about them extensively throughout a good part of the rest of our parak and into the next parak. So here he's giving out verbally who's going to get what. If he gives more of the estate to one of the sons and gives more to one and less to another, or if he made the bechor equal to all of them and didn't give him the double portion, then Dvarav Kayamin, then what he says is valid, because a person can give him a tana however he wants. So therefore, it's not masna al-masha kasa batara, because you can't say, the point is, he's giving away all his possessions, he's giving away all his property, after he passes away, there's not going to be anything for there to be Yerusha. In other words, the Torah says that when he passes away, then his estate should go to his children, and that each of them should get a portion, and that the Bechor should get a double portion. But here, in effect, what he did is he gave away all the estate while he was still alive, and a person has a right to give whatever presents he wants. V'im omam v'shem Yerusha, but if he doesn't say it as a present, if he says it as a lashon of Yerusha, if he says that Ploini should yarshin this field and Ploini should yarshin that other field, then once he's mentioning the word of Yerusha, then already it's masna al-masha kasav haTorah, because the Torah says who yarshins what, and he doesn't have the ability to do that. Which means that the Rashbam points out, now the Gemara has mentioned before briefly the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Breuka, which is going to come up again later on in our parak, that it depends. If he says the word Yerusha about somebody who is in the line of Yerusha, one of his children or grandchildren or ever, somebody who's in the direct line of Yerusha from him, then it would work, says Rabbi Yochanan ben Breuka, even if he tries to alter the order that says in the Torah. That we're going to have later on Daf Kuf Lamed, we're going to have a Mishnah that mentions Rabbi Yochanan ben Breuka's opinion. But our Mishnah over here goes like the Chachamim, that says that no question then, according to the Chachamim, if he tries to prevent one of them, if he tries to disinherit one of them altogether, it's not going to work with a lashon of Yerusha. But even where it's not disinheriting, even where it's giving more to one and less to the other, still, if he uses a word of Yerusha, then it doesn't work. On the other hand, continues the Mishnah, Kosev ben v'tchila, ben v'emsa, ben v'seif, mishum matana, but if some place in the document where he's writing out, that's being written out for his matana, if he mentions anywhere in it, at the beginning, or at the middle, or at the end, he mentions a loshana matana, so in other words, you could have that he says, for example, Ploini, my son, should yarshin this and give it to him as a present. Or give it to him as a present and he should yarshin it. We're going to see in the Gemara various lashonis that he could use. So then, Dvar of Kayomin, then what he does is valid because there is a word of matana somewhere in there. Okay. So the Gemara says, Lema masnistin deloy kirabi horda. Now, does that mean that when we're saying in our Mishnah that he's not able to override the dinim of Yerusha, of the Torah, without a matana being involved, does that mean our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda? De'i Rabbi Yehuda ha'omer b'davashal momen t'noi kayim. Rabbi Yehuda says that when it comes to a davash of a momen, then a person can make a condition against something that it says in the Torah, and it would work. D'tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, ha'omer l'isha hareyat mekudeshesli amanas she'en l'cholai sher k'sus v'oina.
A man says to a woman, I'm Makadish you on condition that you have no claims against me of She'er Ksus V'Oino, which are the three things that the Torah says that a husband has to give his wife, where Ksus means giving her the proper amount of clothing, as we learned in Ksubas, the details of that. She'er and Oino, there were two different opinions in the Gemara and Ksubas. One is that She'er means food, and Oino means that he has to regularly be available for Tashmish with her. The other opinion flips those around and says that She'er is the Oino of Tashmish, and Oino is food. Whatever the case, the point is he owes her those three things, food, clothing, and Oino.
He's saying that I'm marrying you on condition that I'm not going to be responsible for any of those things.
So the mayor says that the kiddushin are valid, but the tnai is bottled because how can he make it? He can't make a tnai against what it says in the Torah. The Torah clearly says that a husband is responsible for those three things to his wife. So therefore, he doesn't have any ability to override that. And then he doesn't have any ability to override that and to say that I'm imposing my own tznoyim. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'davar shel mamon tznoy kayim. Rabbi Yehuda says when it's a matter of mamon, then it is a valid condition. He is able to override the din daraisa when it comes to she'er and when it comes to ksus, whatever, when it comes to food and when it comes to however you define, whichever one you define as food. But as far as food and clothing, those are matters of mamon, says Rabbi Yehuda. So therefore, he could validly make a condition against that, because fine, it's a dovish of a mammon, and with matters of mammon, it is possible to override the rules that the Torah says. But when it comes to oina, which is not a matter of mammon, then Rabbi Yehuda agrees he can't override what it says in the Torah. So the point is, when our Mishnah is saying that the father has no ability to override the dinim of Yerusha and the Torah, which are a matter of dinim ominous, then that seemingly wouldn't work out according to Rabbi Yehuda. Tosfos actually refers over here to something that they discuss on this in Ksubas, where it discusses this point of tnoi bottle, that we have to be talking about that Rav Meir himself holds there needs to be a tnai koffel. Whenever you're making a condition in something, you need to repeat it. You need to say, if this, then that, and if not this, then not that, because we learn from tnai b'nei God or b'nei Reuven. So Tosfos discusses over there that on the face of it, it would be necessary for him to make that double stipulation over here. Otherwise, anyway, it wouldn't be a tnai, and then Tosfos has a long discussion of it over there. So the point is, our Mishnah seemingly is not like Rabbi Yehuda, and that's a problem, because the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda in that. So the answer is afilu tamer Rabbi Yehuda. You could even say the question is also that our Mishnah is a stam Mishnah. The halacha is usually like a stam Mishnah. Now later on, we have the machlokas of Rabbi Yechon and Mebroka on our Mishnah. We have a rule when there's a stam and later on a machlokas, then the halacha is not like the stam. That would mean the halacha is, so the halacha wouldn't be like our Mishnah, but then in other words, what's the point of our Mishnah then? The Gemara is bothered by what, that our Mishnah, a stam Mishnah should on the face of it be according to everybody, except Rabbi Yechon ben Berakah. We're fine. We have his opinion later on. Anyway, the answer is afilu tamer Rabbi Yehuda. Hosam yodav kamochla. The difference is that in that case, she knows that she's entitled to she'er ksus va'ona, and she can willingly forego the ones that are mammon. So therefore, we can say that it's not a problem that he's trying to override that. As opposed to hochel like a mochel, but here the son is not being mochel because he doesn't necessarily know what he's giving up. Not so much he doesn't know what he's giving up. If he has no hannah from it, there at least you can say she has the hannah that she's getting married. But over here, the son is not having any hannah from his father disinheriting him or taking away his chelik b'chora. All it is he doesn't say anything, says the Rashbam. Okay, it means he didn't want to anger his father. His father is going to say, I'm disinheriting you, so he's not going to say anything. So in order to keep the peace, doesn't mean necessarily that he's willing to be murder. By the way, the Sefer HaChinuch makes a point. He says, it may be true, as we're saying over here, that what the father says will have no effect. Nevertheless, he says that the father would be over on the mitzvah saseh, that the Torah says that he can't disinherit his sons and he can't disinherit the bechor of his double portions. Even though it's not actually effective, nevertheless, he's still over on a mitzvah in the Torah. So now, from the Rashbam's words, actually, it comes out that only because the son is not saying anything doesn't mean, therefore, he's not merciful because he doesn't want to start an argument with his father. But in other words, it sounds like he could actually befeirush be merciful, and that would work. Many other Rishonim disagree with that and say that, no, it doesn't exist yet. Before, we were talking about the Bechor foregoing his double portion or whatever, but that was after his father had passed away, before they divided up the estate. But here we're talking about while the father is still alive, he wouldn't have the ability to be mochel on it at all, because it doesn't belong to him yet. So a number of Rishonim learn that it means that we're saying even if it were to be possible for him to be mochel at this point, here he's not being mochel because the fact is, not just because, as the Rashbam says, he doesn't want to start an argument, but because he has no ability to be mochel yet, something that doesn't exist to him at all. So the Yad Ramah makes a different point over here. When it comes to Sheir Ksus V'Oina, it's not something that he owed her Sheir Ksus anyway. It's not something that he owed her from when she was born. At the time of Kiddushin is when these Chiyuvim are starting to be Chal, and therefore, and therefore, according to Rav Yehuda, she's able to forego them and be moichel on him. But here, from when he was born, he's already entitled to the Yerusha, and he wasn't moichel then, so therefore he can't be moichel afterwards as well. Anyway, so the Gemara continues, Omer Rav Yosef, So that's the bottom line then. So you know our Mishnah works out even according to Rabbi Yehuda, because even Rabbi Yehuda would say only in the case of Kiddushin is it possible to be Moichel, but not here because of any of these considerations. Okay. The Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Amar ish ploini bni b'chori hu noto pishnayim, if the father says ploini, who is my b'chor, gets a double portion, if he says ish pliny bni b'chori hu, if he says pliny is my b'chor noto pishnayim, then that son gets a double portion, even though the father didn't explicitly say that he does. But once the father identified him as my b'chor, then automatically he gets a double portion. But ish pliny b'chor hu, but if the father only says that pliny is a b'chor without saying my b'chor, eina noto pishnayim, he doesn't automatically because of that get a double portion, because the father may have meant duma b'chor de ima kamer. Maybe he means that this is the firstborn of his mother. Now, the firstborn of the mother is relevant as far as Pidyon HaBen, but it's not relevant as far as Yerusha, where it's only the Bechor or the father who gets the double portion, as the Gemara had explained earlier in the panel. So the Gemara gives an example. Ahuda also kamei de Rava Baba Chana. A person came for a din Torah in front of Rava Baba Chana. Omale, he says, Muchzakni bezeh shehu bechor. I know as a chazaka that Pliny is a bechor, so you should be getting a double portion. So obviously you have two aid, the Rashbam points out, you have one person came and said this, but obviously one aid is not enough, you need two, so it means there was another person who came along and said the same thing. Omer le menoya data, so Rabbi Baba Chana asks him, how do you know that the guy is a Bukhar? So he says, to have a kori le avur Bukhar Sikhla, because his father used to call him a foolish Bukhar. And since the father has the ability to say that his son is a Bukhar, as we've just said, and as the Gemara is going to work out in more detail later, so therefore, automatically that means he called him a bechor. But Rabbi Bachana says, what kind of a proof is that? Duma bechor de imahu. Maybe it means that he's only a firstborn of his mother. The whole bechor de ima nami bechor sichu lekarolei. In fact, they have a regular expression when a person is bechor only from his mother. They call him a foolish bechor. Because what you have is you actually have the Hebrew equivalent of it would be bechor shoite. And the word shoita doesn't always mean a shoita as in a fool. It can also mean shoita as in like not the right kind of thing. Like, for example, you have a hadas shoita, which doesn't have three leaves at a time on it. So the same way, b'chor shoita would be like a not complete b'chor. So he's only a b'chor from his mother, not necessarily his father. So therefore, the fact that his father called him b'chor shoita, says Rami Baba Chana,
You have no proof that his father is a Bechor. In fact, on the contrary, he might be, he might be an incomplete Bechor, meaning that he's not a Bechor as far as this particular din. So we see, in other words, that the father has to say he's my Bechor, or say some other expression that amounts to saying that, that he is in fact his father's Bechor. So the Gemara continues, another example. Ahud also a kamed of Chanina. A person came to Rav Chanina, omole muchzakni bezeh shu b'chor. I know I have a chazaka that this person is a b'chor. Omole menoy yodaita. So Rav Chanina asks him, how do you know? Omole. So the guy says, b'kihavu also legabe avua, because when they would come to his father, people would come to him with eye aches. And a refuah that was known to be in those times for eye aches is to spit into the eye, but specifically it was an accepted medical idea that the spit of a bechor from his father is particularly effective for that. So omalahu, so the father would tell them, zilu legabe shikhas bri, go to my son shikhas debuchrahu, because he's a bechor, umasi ruke, and his saliva is more effective for that kind of thing. So therefore, in other words, so that alone establishes that his father called him a Bechor. Again, the question is, v'dim a Bechor de'imahu, maybe he's only a Bechor of his mother. And the answer is, Gemiri, because we have a Kabbalah, Bechor de'abe masi ruke, only a Bechor from his father is a saliva effective for that kind of thing. Bechor de'imale masi ruke, but if he's only a Bechor of his mother, then his saliva is not effective. So the fact that the father is telling them to go to his son Shikhas because he's a Bechor and his saliva is effective for that alone shows that he really is a Bechor of his father, because otherwise the father wouldn't have said such a thing. In fact, the Meiri points out over here, you know, you're talking about over here basically a folk belief. You're not sort of talking about something which is scientifically validated, that the spit of a Bechor works for this and the spit of a non-Bechor doesn't, but because it's one of those kinds of things, it's an accepted thing in that society, that's how it is, then therefore that's good enough. We can use that as a chazaka to say that he is in fact a Bechor of his father, even to the extent that now he should be entitled to the double portion. So the next piece of Gemara is, which we'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, is going to continue about other dinim of a Bechor, is going to continue about other dinim of a Bechor, and other dinim in general. We're going to talk about cases involving a tumtum vandragonus. As far as the previous piece, as far as the son being able to be moichel or not, where again the Rashbam had apparently held that if he says that he's moichel b'feirush, then it would work, and many other Rishonim disagree with that. There's also within that itself, even when the Rashbam says that he's able to be moichel, that implies that he's able to be moichel, you have opinions. You have the Or Zeruah in particular explains the most he can be moichel on is the chelik b'chora, because again it's called a matana, and as we learned on But Aleph, therefore, he has the ability to be moichalit. Within that, you have a discussion of achroinim. What exactly can be moichal on? Can be completely moichal while his father is alive. Tzoyis holds that way. The Nesivus holds that all he can do is saying that he's giving his father the ability to take it away from him. Be that as it may, but the Or Zeruah learned that even according to the Rashbam, he wouldn't be able to forego his Yerusha entirely. Or the most that a Bechor could do is forego his Chelik Bechorah. And again, according to other Rishonim, he couldn't even forego any of it at all, because he's automatically entitled to it, and therefore even if he's moichel, it wouldn't work. Again, even according to the Yehuda, that masna masha kasa b'torah works when it's a double shabba mammon, but Yerusha is different for these reasons.
Yeah. Regarding